Hi, Dan.
Hey, Jason.
We are in a. It's an interesting week.
It is an interesting week, isn't it? Let's cover it all in 30 minutes. Ready? Go. This is clockwise with two people.
And this is going to be a little fast because we have a thing to get to because we're doing puzzles this weekend. So, puzzling event.
Mm-hmm.
That I am. Well, I mean, the event's not puzzling. I understand it.
Well, it might be.
That's true. That's
always
true.
Anyway, a chance.
I am now an adjunct member of your and Tony Sindelar's team for the MIT Mystery
Adjunct. I think you're a full member. I don't know.
I feel like we got our best minds in California working on that one, right? Like that's the event's happening where you are, and then we're like the California bureau. Anyway, so
we should get to it fast.
Big news of the week, though. Eddie Q has a blog apparently, or thinks that the Apple Newsroom is his blog.
You know, they said that personal blogging was going to make a comeback in this year of our Lord 2023, and apparently Eddie Q is on board with that.
Yeah, post this on Twitter, and they're like, Eddie, I mean, Elon was here, we could do that, but he's like, yeah, post it on Newsroom, that's my blog. And they're like, who's going to tell him? And nobody told him. And so it's funny, because it's like Eddie has some thoughts, but also it's a bunch of like factoids about the various things that are going on in services. Interesting, new, different way of doing kind of a little PR, I guess, kind of a victory lap. also struck me that maybe this is... It felt to me, Dan, I don't know how you felt about it, but like it felt to me like this was the sort of thing that usually Tim Cook reads out on a piece of paper in the first 20 minutes of the phone call with analysts results came out. And I wonder if they decided to kind of get this out of the way now or trumpet it now, knowing that whatever they say about this on February 2nd, when the results come out, we'll be completely swamped. So like if you guys want to boast about services, let's do it now. So they did.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a very much a overview of all the stuff that this stuff went great, you know, and I, as several people said, yeah, like getting stuff out ahead of other challenges that might have happened this quarter makes a lot of sense to sort of, you know, precede your good news. But it's still weird. I mean, Steve Jobs famously loved to use the Apple site as his personal blog at random times.
Yep.
So,
and Tim Cook has done it.
He's following that. Yep, Tim's done that as well. So, I mean, it's a big platform, right? That's the thing. Here, we've discussed this before with like product releases. Apple Newsroom is not a site that most people are going to read, right?
Right.
It's not a site that the average person's like, oh, I'm refreshing Apple Newsroom just to
see
what's
happening.
It's
one of our favorites, though.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's just the point. It's covered by journalists and tech writers and stuff like that. So we do keep an eye on that because it's where the official missives from the country come. The country. Company. The country. I always mix those two words up. The country of Apple. Appleistan. Mm-hmm. But it is also a, you know, it's like I said, it's a big way for them to get the word out, right? And that is, you know, in some ways, Apple was ahead of the game on that whole, like, you know, a lot of companies go to social media these days.
Right.
And Apple was like, well, we're just going to put stuff on our site. We control it. And it's like, yeah, this is Apple likes controlling things. Makes a lot of sense.
The word is services. That's the word they're putting out there now. I like the idea that one day Jeff Williams is just going to post something on the Newsroom and it's going to be like, what's the deal with airline food? It's like, Jeff, no, that's not what it's for.
But all right. Yeah. That was one among many interesting things to happen this week. Another that came out, was it midway through the week, was this Mark Gurman Bloomberg report about Apple deciding potentially to do touchscreen Macs.
Woo!
Oh, yeah. What a party.
Yeah, I mean, everybody got to bring out their Steve Jobs would have never done this or whatever, which is like Steve Jobs has been dead a long time now. No way to know what he would think in 2022 about things, because how would it have gone? The branches are so great now that you just have to set that aside. That's the bottom line, is if we're being serious.
That's a stub.
It is a thing that he discounted at the time, but then again, I mean...
You discount a lot of things.
I think one question I have is, and then recounted them, right? Like, he would have had decade to change his mind, too. So, I'm fascinated by this because, like, I'm sure they've been experimenting with this, but I wonder what threshold this went over to make Mark Gurman report it as Apple is working on this. And again, he says it's like 2 years out. Like, who knows what will happen?
Sure.
But they're working on it. And I wonder what step that is, because I'm sure they were investigating it, but has it gotten to the point where it's gotten a little more funding or attention where they're like, yes, you need to bring this to product? And is it going to be, like, a lot of people were carting out the usual kind of like, well, it's no a laptop configuration. You don't want to reach out. And it's like, okay. First off, my daughter had a Chromebook for a long time that was a touchscreen. And the fact is, you did use the touchscreen. Not a lot, but like every now and then there's like an interface element that pops up on screen. It's just so natural to go boop and then move on, right? Like, I'm not going to be doing Photoshop with my arms extended, right? But scrolling on a screen is really natural, right? It's something we've all been trained to do. Tapping, it's natural. And I think most importantly, what Apple hasn't been able to do, except sort of with the iPad in the last decade plus, that's been done on the Windows side, is experiment with different designs of laptop that let you do things like fold the screen back or flip the screen around or detach the keyboard and still have a viable thing that you can use sort of like and go into a primary touch mode. And I started to think, like, I don't know whether Apple's intent is a very casual kind of like, yeah, you can scroll and stuff, but that's about it. Or whether what they're really driving for is more like a MacBook Studio with, excuse me, with Apple Pencil support. And, you know, and like you could go all the way, something that's like convertible, because the convertible stuff is not something Apple's been able to explore on the Mac, only with the iPad.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, like you said, we don't know what stage it's in. These, you know, things say 2025 for the first possible model. And even that, I mean, people have saying the Apple car is 5 years away for 10, 15 years now. So take it with a grain of salt. But it tells you that this is in the, to me, that says the very earliest stages. It says this is not a thing that is shipping right anytime soon. This is a thing we are thinking about building, and we could decide not to do it still.
But the threshold seems to have been crossed at least a little bit, right?
It does, yeah. I feel like it's, you know, this has often been derided as sort of the toaster fridge. You know, it's the it's not great at any of the things. But I think that, you know, the iPad, as you said, has made a compelling argument that people are okay using a keyboard and a trackpad and also using a touchscreen device. Also, plenty of PCs. And you can make the argument that they're not always great experiences,
right?
But there are a lot of them, and people buy them. And it is, you know, it is something that Apple isn't really doing. I think the potentially the interesting question is, as several people have said, what does this mean for the iPad?
Right.
You know,
I mean, so yeah, my question was going to be, what's great about the iPad is that it can be anything, right? Like, especially all at the high end, but like, it's a touch tablet. It is a tablet with a pencil that you can draw on that's got pressure sensitivity and all the rest. It is a thing you can pop in a keyboard case. It's a thing you can attach to an external display now and an external keyboard and trackpad. It's all those things. You know, the one thing it isn't, the only thing it isn't is a Mac, right? Like, that's the only thing it isn't. And, I know this has been like one of those things that it's a road Apple doesn't want to go down, but like, if there's a touchscreen Mac, and especially if there ends up being a convertible Mac at some point, like, why are the Mac and the iPad completely separate at that point? Because, and I wonder if they are, because Apple could just make the choice to let the Mac run all iPad apps, right? Like, currently it's like you got to opt in or whatever, but Apple could just say, no, all iPad apps run on this thing. At which point, it kind of would be an iPad and a Mac.
Yep.
At the same time. And I know you don't want to mess it up. I think there are lots of simplicity in the iPad market that is good, that a low-end iPad is not this. But like, when you start to converge up there at the top between the Mac and the iPad, and you look at a potential product like a Mac with a touchscreen, a laptop with a touchscreen, yeah, I think this is the real question, is why would you have an artificial barrier there and say, no, for that you need an iPad if you got to the point of a convertible Mac? The alternative is that Apple will continue to pull its punches, and I think it hurts them there too, right? Because then they're like, well, the Mac has got a touchscreen, but we aren't going to touch the iPads thing. And the iPad's got all this stuff, but it's not a Mac. And like, well, okay, but you're hurting yourself here, right? You see that, right?
Right.
Like, neither of these products is allowed to reach its full potential now because they don't want to cross over to the other one's territory. And that doesn't seem natural to me.
Yeah, it is weird, right? Because, like you said, it feels like the lines become a little more arbitrary. I mean, it seems like there might be still things like, will touchscreen Macs have Apple Pencil support?
Right. Like, I think it would need to be a convertible, right? Because, again, you don't really want to reach out to the screen. But if you can drop that screen down or flip it around,
sure,
why would it not have Apple Pencil support, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I am fascinated by this. I mean, and it does address another issue that's been this longstanding problem on the iPad side, which is trying to take advantage of all the power that's in there in the way the operating system works. And they're still struggling with it, as we've seen with Stage Manager. Stage Manager is an interesting idea, but it is something that it's not been the like home run I think that Apple probably hoped it would be, where it was like, this will solve everybody's complaints about multitasking on the iPad. Didn't do that. Part of that's because it's super buggy still, and part of it's just because it doesn't feel like it was designed quite right. And when you still have the Mac sitting there as a counterpart to it, it feels watered down still. Yeah. And that's tricky. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, the iPad has been such a weird market for Apple. It's had its super ups, it's had its real downs. I don't know where, you know, I don't think they're going to go out and just be like, yeah, Mac can do touchscreens now, so the iPad's dead. Like, I don't think they're going to do that.
No, but I wonder about the iPad Pro, right? Like, what's the point of having that high level iPad that you're trying to converge with the Mac if you already have the Mac? I do wonder also that if you, and nobody's saying necessarily that they're going to make convertibles, but like, let's assume they make a convertible, which again, you flip the screen around one way or another and you end up holding a thing in your hand that looks like a tablet, but it's thick because the keyboard's there unless you detach it. Okay, there's lots of different versions of this, right? But it's like a laptop that can become a tablet. At that point, you know, are you running macOS or are you running iOS, iPadOS at that point? I don't know whether iPadOS becomes a mode on certain Mac laptops instead, but I don't think they're going to kill the iPad because I think the low-end iPad and even the mid-range iPad make a lot of sense for a lot of people. It's just that question of like, you know, I would say it's even more about the potential of the Mac, right? Like, if the Mac wants to spread its wings in some interesting ways that the Windows PCs have been doing for a while now, are you going to stop it because of the iPad? I think that's the real question. Or are you going to use the iPad as a way to facilitate letting the Mac spread its wings? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's an interesting question. And it's, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot happening there. And it's hard to unpack it all without knowing exactly what everything is going to look like if this even comes to fruition. So I think it's clear there's probably some shakeups coming in Apple's product line in the next, you know, few years. I don't think any of this is imminent, and I think a lot of it's going to depend on sort of the direction of these products over the next couple of years as well, right? I mean, the iPad line, you know, how is it going to do? How is it doing, right? Like, how is it doing? It's had, as I said, it's had its up years and its down years, right? If it's one of those situations where it's like, you know, the iPad's doing great, and like, we're selling a ton of it, then maybe they don't want to mess with it. But if it seems like, you know, we've hit this another dip in sort of iPad sales, maybe we need to rethink how this product line works and what we're getting out of it. But I do think you're totally right that the iPad Pro seems like something potentially on the chopping block, especially because you look at stuff like the iPad Air, which is already so capable. And it's like, is the stuff in the iPad Pro really adding that much? You know, what is the percentage of users buying this? What's on there that we don't have in the Air, or what could we not bring to the Air? I think simplifying the iPad lineup actually might be a benefit for it in the long run, but we'll see.
Also, the iPad Pro, I mean, there's an argument to be made that the iPad Pro hardware today, it should be a Mac, right? Or should dual boot Mac OS. And I know that seems super wacky, but like, it's an M2. It's got external display support, and it's got a keyboard and a trackpad you can put it in. Like, the only reason the iPad Pro with Magic Keyboard does not support Mac OS is because Apple doesn't want it to. But it's like, literally the difference between that thing and a MacBook Air M2 is exceedingly small. And and the differences between them, and if you say, oh yeah, but it's probably lacking, well, whatever you're going to say about it's lacking this thing that the Mac has, my answer to you is it's only lacking it because Apple chose to not put it there. Like, right. If Apple wanted to, it could absolutely build an M2 MacBook or iPad Pro that could run Mac OS, either boot into it or run it as a VM or whatever. And that, I think, is the question here. The bigger question is like, all right, Apple, you're going to have a touchscreen on your laptop, My fear, you know, what do you want it to be? My fear is what they're going to do is your the most basic implementation, that it'll still look like a MacBook Pro, but you'll be able to tap on it and stuff. My hope is that they'll say, no, when we're saying we're investigating touchscreens on Mac laptops, we are really thinking bigger picture. And the kind of stuff that would take 2025 or later to do, which is, what's the future of Mac portability? How can we use all the stuff we built for the iPad and the stuff that's great about the Mac to build another great product? And I'm sure they're asking those questions. My concern is that this is actually what we're hearing here, is that somebody won a battle to get a small version of that, and that Apple's not. I hope they're not so timid that they kind of like are like, yeah, you want a touchscreen, you got your stupid touchscreen. Because I think there's a lot of potential there, and I do think that the overlap with the iPad, it's a shame. I mean, I keep coming back to this, but it's like, it feels a little bit like the iPad and the Mac are both now constrained about what they can possibly be in the future by the existence of the other one, and that's unfortunate. Shouldn't be like that.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be an interesting. I can't wait for Tim Cook's blog
about that on the newsroom. It's gonna be great.
Oh yeah, we're gonna hear all about it. Yeah.
I have a byline. The first line will say, "This is Tim."
This is Tim. Good morning.
Good morning. So for a sleepy week in January, you know, there's stuff going on.
Yeah, we'll throw out this other thing, which is, I think, a developing story as we're recording this. But Twitter's third party clients, many third party clients in Twitter,
a bunch
are not working.
Stopped working. Others didn't.
Yeah, weirdly. I've seen a lot of theories about this, and it's borne out by basically no actual evidence. And I mean, that's not a knock against it. It's just pointing out that Twitter no longer has a communications department to talk about these things, as well as many other people who might be, say, in charge of these systems that broke. So, you know, I think there was a certain feeling, I think, for a lot of people, that the writing was always on the wall for third-party clients, because they make an end run around a lot of the things that Twitter wants to seem to be doing. Like, just earlier this week, they changed the, like, basically the timeline is strictly algorithmic if you go through the app or the website, right? You can't get to your, like, reverse chronological view anymore, I think. Or at least they made it,
you have to tap every time to switch it, I think, is how it works.
Either way, they clearly want to foist the algorithmic timeline more. That's never been a thing that third-party clients, like, had to do, right? They've always been able to get away with not doing that. They've always been able to not serve ads, which has also been a big point of, like, well, you're just giving away the same content for free then, aren't you? Why wouldn't you use the third-party client? So it felt like a little bit like Elon Musk was going to eventually be like, wait a second, why are we giving this all away to people who are making money off it that are not giving us any money, basically? So it wouldn't surprise me if they decided to pull the plug on it. But it does seem weirdly arbitrary right now and inconsistent. So I'm not really sure what is going on there. But I know you have evinced the opinion in the past, as have I, that losing third-party client support for Twitter would be a nail in the coffin of personal usage at the very least.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not really interested in. I'm not that interested in Twitter anymore. I'm really not interested in not using a third party client for it. So, I might end up bookmarking my Twitter list that I still read, or putting it in an RSS feed or something. But that's about it. Like, yeah, fortunately, Twitterific on the Mac actually does still work.
It seems to be the one that skated by.
But is that an oversight? Who knows?
I saw some suggestions it had to do with, like, they're using a potentially older version of the API or something.
Yeah, I don't know. And
weird.
You know, it seems like Twitter probably doesn't know. You know, if I thought Twitter had a strategy, which I don't, I think that they're flailing everywhere. They were already flailing, and then Elon Musk came in, fired most of them, and then the remaining people flailed harder. But if they were to have a strategy, I think that their strategy should be, you have to pay for Twitter Blue to use the API so that we get your money, and then third party clients go to town, basically. Or you could also say third party clients, you have to show these ads or whatever. Like, you could have a strategy for third party clients that would encourage adoption of your platform, because there's power in that. But, you know, have they done anything coherent and cohesive and that they've stuck to at all as a part of this? No, yeah. They haven't. It's much more likely that somebody did this by mistake, or that there was just an edict to shut them all off and they missed some, than it is that it's part of any bigger picture, which is dumb. I'm not sure I would pay for Twitter Blue in order to get access to Twitter via a third-party client at this point. I'm not sure I want to give them my money. But if I were working at Twitter, God help me, that would be my suggestion, is set up a program where it's like, if you want access to the API and see those beautiful, beautiful tweets in your own, in a third-party app that isn't controlled by us, that's fine, but you got to pay us. And only paid accounts will be able to be logged in to those apps. I don't like that idea. I'm logged into like 8 different accounts, but I could see it as a business model, but that doesn't seem to be what they're doing. It's bananas. Anyway, yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Maybe it's just, by the time you hear this, it might be like, whoops, that was fixed. or whoops, yep. Now they're all dead. I don't know.
Yep, they've announced it's all dead. Yeah, I don't know. It's, like I said, I think it's just another nail in the coffin. I had already dialed back a lot what I was doing on Twitter. And I think combined with, as I also posted about this week, the folks at Tapbots doing their Ivory client, which they've now published a roadmap for, all of that makes me feel a lot better. I mean, Mastodon is not a swap-in replacement for Twitter necessarily, but there are things I like about it, and I enjoy some of the community that's happening there.
There's a lot of tech community people over there. It feels like that subset of the community has gone over there. We are Six Colors at Mastodon.social, by the way. If you want to follow the site, there's an auto-post bot that will post links there, just like it does to Bleed Six Colors on Twitter. So, yeah, you can do that if you want to. And
sure,
you
why know, not?
Dan, you and I are both over there, and I'm not doing a lot over there. I am trying. I heard somebody describe Mastodon as the methadone of social media, and I think it is a little bit of that for me, which is I'm trying to reduce my overall social media usage, not just move from Twitter and then just pick it up on Mastodon, but I am at least somewhat present on there and somewhat willing to contribute actual things to the discussion. And on Twitter, it's very much like I'm there to read some stuff and occasionally respond if somebody asks me a question. And that's about all I'm willing to provide. Because the truth is, and this is like easy for us to say, but like we have other platforms that we control for our words. And never has it been clearer to me that that's important. In fact, I'm very happy that Relay has built their new feedback system where we don't need to ask people to send in a tweet if they have a question for us, that they can actually go to a web page on the Relay website and do it there. And that's only right. Like that's great.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I've toyed a lot with, you know, like, should I do more blogging or should I do more stuff on, you know, platforms under my control? And I think I probably will, but at the same time, I, you know, having the barrier to entry, I think, has always been the challenge when it comes to personal blogging. Like, it's not super hard, but it's just hard enough to like get a blog set up and think about, oh, I got to design a site. And I got all this. Like, that's the reason why I think sites like, you know, Blogger and WordPress in the early days made that kind of thing easy, was it was pretty much just like point and click and get that all running. But even then, you are still sort of on a site under somebody else's control. So if you really wanted to run a site on your own, you had to like get your hands a bit dirty, and it was a pain. And also it felt like there was a certain weight to like writing a blog post, right? Was like, oh man, am I gonna write a whole blog post about this when I could just be writing, you know, 140 characters to get sort of the nub of my thought out there. I don't know. It felt very, very easy. And perhaps that was also part of its downfall, was like, let's make it super easy for people to share whatever comes into their heads. Mm-hmm. How could this go wrong? So, you know, I like the idea of maybe going back to doing some more stuff that's on platforms that I control. But I also am under no illusion that I will probably do it a lot less, because it's just more work.
Yeah, and I'm participating in communities, you know, in Slacks and Discords.
Sure.
And
yeah, same.
That is also a replication of like I can have conversations and see what people are talking about around the water cooler, but it's a little more focused. Those communities are more focused and not just sort of like drifting randomly through the world, which has value, but it's a lot less value than it used to have, and more negativity about it. Then it's fine. It's fine. I mean, I will say this about Mastodon too. You know, the people are the same. And so I know that maybe there aren't quite the same awful people there, but like human nature is the same. And I have already had multiple negative interactions on Mastodon that are exactly like the negative interactions I had on Twitter, where somebody replies to something, not getting the joke, or trying to one up the joke, or criticizing the execution of the joke, or criticizing the thing I shared for an un... I mean, this happens everywhere. I literally got a comment on a gist I posted on GitHub and linked to from Six Colors from somebody who said, you should... You didn't build this string variable in the coolest way. It literally didn't save any time, but it was like, but it's the new thing. And I thought, like, even in a dry, you would think, thing like a code repository, human nature is human nature, right? It's like, I can't let this go. I just posted a thing because I thought it would be convenient, and somebody's like, it's not quite cool enough. Like, dude, I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, and this happens even in private communities too, right? I mean,
it does.
Discords and Slacks, you know?
It does. People are people.
It is.
Yeah. If you just get rid of the people, social media will be great.
Can't escape them.
Bots talking to bots. That's what we need. All right.
Brands. Brands talking to brands.
We are going to cut it a little early because we've got stuff that we have puzzles to solve and places to be. But we thank you for supporting Six Colors. Maybe next week will be more exciting than this week. I hope so. That'd
this
be nice.
Pretty exciting. I don't know. What's going to happen next?
I maybe the V2 blog post on the newsroom site from Eddie. Eddie's going to finally share his photos of wearing Lederhosen in Germany. That's what my prediction for next week. All right. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.